Hey, it's Chuck Armstrong with Loudwire Nights, and this is Loudwire Nights On Demand. We had the chance to hang with Greg Edwards from Failure, celebrating their latest album, Location Lost. This interview aired on Wednesday, June 10th. Enjoy. Well, tonight we're hanging out with one of my favorite bands of the last few decades, and we're celebrating their latest album and a lot of live shows this year, too. Bassist, guitarist, multi-instrumentalist, founding member Greg Edwards of Failure. Man, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, right out of the gate, congrats on this latest album from Failure, Location Lost. This marks your seventh album as a band, your fourth since returning from a long hiatus. How's it feel to have the album out in the world?
It's good. It feels, I don't know. I think we've released so many records now. I've learned to kind of turn down the expectation level, you know, so I don't really make a big deal of it, you know, that
yeah.
It's another record. And the most important thing about it for me is going out playing the songs and playing to, you know, people that want to hear it, because that's always the most surprising thing. You're so insulated when you're working on stuff. And then when you actually go out and get and you're on stage and you're playing the music, it's sometimes startling, you know, how people respond to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's gotta be an interesting sort of dichotomy, man, of just making the album yourselves. And like you said, kind of being insulated, and then, all right, you release the album. You're still not quite sure exactly how people are connecting to it. You can see some data points, of course, but not until you take the stage do you really experience that. And I imagine that's kind of been the case for the entirety of this band.
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, it seemed it was, you know, our first few tours, it was like hard to know if anybody more than, you know, maybe three or four people had even heard our records, you know, three or four people and the guys in Tool. And then it really wasn't until after we broke up during the hiatus that I started to hear things from people, and people would sometimes come up to me and or a friend of a friend would say, oh yeah, my you know, uncle's cousin's sister is a Failure fan, you know, things like that. That would just be, wouldn't make sense, because I figured we were, after we broke up, I figured that was it. It would fade into total obscurity. And so during that hiatus, it just, there was kind of a sense of building and building interest. And then when we reformed and did that first show at the El Rey, it was shocking, you know?
Yeah.
And it's still kind of shocking. And great. It's great that I think for all three of us, the most satisfying part of it is that we have young fans, that we have so many young fans that have discovered it in their teens and early 20s, and they've just discovered it on their own, you know, through coming across it on a playlist or on YouTube or something. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's different now than the 90s of how people might discover a band or come across a band.
Absolutely, yeah. And that part of discovery is great. I think, I don't know, it's so overwhelming how many options there are. And I don't know, it seems like it's very different. And then again, I think at the top, it's really not that different. You know, the biggest selling artists and the stuff that gets the most money put behind it is still kind of jammed down people's throats in the same way it always has been. And I think through the algorithms and through AI, the things at the top, they found a just as good or even more efficient way to jam it down our throats.
Right.
So, but when you talk about like, you know, there's just too many, there's too many bands. It's too, I mean, it's great, but it's also just too easy to now record your own record and put it out. And it's hard to suss out what, you know, what is worthwhile and what's not. So you just sort of give up, you know.
Yeah.
For me, it's hard to discover new stuff. There's an overwhelming amount to choose from.
Yeah, for sure, man. And do you get as a not as a fan trying to discover music, but as a creator, do you get disillusioned or frustrated by the algorithms and by the overwhelming presence of AI and all of that?
I have been. When the algorithm is operating in a really kind of stupid way, and it thinks it knows what you want, and the way that it thinks it knows what you want is actually giving you exactly what you don't want or need. and that seems to be the more unsophisticated part of the evolution of AI. But I suspect that AI is just going to get, you know, better and better at really understanding. Maybe I'm not necessarily for better. This could be worst case scenario, but really understanding us and really understanding what each one of us as individuals wants and needs. And I don't know what the ultimate implications of that are, but in terms of music, it may be helpful for finding the stuff you really like.
Well, that's a small bright spot. I'll take that, man. You talk about, obviously there's longtime fans of Failure, and then, you know, new generation finding the band and discovering the band. And, you know, for this new album, Location Lost, you've said it yourself that there's some things you hear that don't really have a precedence for what you guys have done in the world of Failure. Was that an intentional thing when you started writing Location Lost, or did it just sort of happen?
Not at all. There was no intention to that. I think we spoke, Ken and I spoke less about what we wanted to do or what our ambitions were with this record than any other record we've made. And I think, just the communication within the band was sort of at an all-time low going into making this record. So if I had to come up with a theory for why there are moments that have no precedence, I think it's because we were each one of us just in our own bubble and didn't really know what we were doing. You know, just we're kind of trying to make sounds that were inspiring or just interesting to us, or just trying to pass the time while we sat in the room and attempted to jam and come up with something worthwhile, something that we could, you know, exploit into a song. But it was, that's the thing. It's always surprising that even when you feel so uninspired, if you just get in a room together and you play long enough, at least with the three of us, something comes out of it, despite the personalities involved.
So, when you guys came together, was it kind of surprising, like the different sounds and different ideas that you brought in?
Not right off the bat. You know, time to start playing, and someone makes a sound and starts playing a part, and the other person might think like, "What? That sucks. I don't want to play to that. why do they keep playing that?" But then you do play to it, you know, you play to it, and then what you play to it maybe on its own isn't so great, but the way that it interacts with the thing that you didn't like, actually the two things together become something interesting. And I think like there's quite a few songs of ours that rely on that.
I love that, man. Certainly one of the moments on the album, one of those moments that might be surprising to a fan, is The Rising Skyline, which has Hayley Williams from Paramore on it. And, you know, just even the sound of the song maybe is different than what a fan might expect, but just the presence of Hayley is different too. You guys don't really collaborate with artists. How did that happen? Why was it Hayley that made sense for this?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if she's the only other voice that's ever been on a failure record other than me and Ken. And Maynard sang on the replicants record.
Yeah.
But she may be the only other one. I can't think of another instance. Yeah. So, well, that was just, Haley's been a longtime fan. I mean, I think Failure was one of the inspirations for Paramore. And when they came together as a band, that was sort of, they all shared a love for Failure. And we've been in touch with her over the years, and Ken's worked with her. I think Ken mixed a Paramore record, or
I think so, yeah.
Produced a Paramore record. And she's come to shows, and he just gave her the record when it was finished, and she responded to that song, to Rising Skyline. And I think somewhat spontaneously, he just said, you want to sing on it? And she said yes, and we just sent her the tracks and let her do whatever she wanted, which was essentially singing an octave above Ken throughout the song. And that worked as a double. It worked as a texture, and you hear that at some parts in the song, but it also worked as a solo in the second verse. There's such a subtle emotion and fragility to the way she sang that verse, that it really, it doesn't sound like a performance. It sounds like those emotions are actually there in her voice when singing it. And so every time I hear it again, I'm surprised by it.
I love that, man. Well, yeah, I mean, no doubt they're fans of Failure, Paramore. I think on their first EP was when they covered Stuck on You, like 20 years ago. And so early on, you know, in their career, they kind of established that love and that appreciation for the band. And, you know, you've mentioned Tool, and then of course A Perfect Circle covered The Nurse Who Loved Me on 13th Step a few years before that. Is it weird for you when you hear other bands cover Failure songs?
No, not really. I mean, I would love to, I'd love to hear more of it.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear a country artist, you know, cover Failure song, or like a folk artist, or like a kind of old school ballad singer cover. I think there's a few Failure songs that could handle that treatment.
I love that, dude. Well, yeah. Put it out in the universe.
I mean, the truth, I shouldn't even admit this, but it was years before I heard The Nurse Who Loved Me cover. I heard about it. I knew that it existed. Sorry, Billy and Maynard. But for whatever reason, I never got around to actually hearing it for years after that album was released. And then when I finally heard it, I was really surprised, because it wasn't what I expected at all. And it's such a unique interpretation of the song.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, you know, a lot of looking back for a band that's been doing this as long as Failure has, and, you know, probably no better instance of looking back than the documentary that you guys released last year, Every Time You Lose Your Mind. It's on Hulu now. You know, you talk about releasing an album, and, you know, by this time in your career, you've kind of figured out, you know, manage your expectations, and it doesn't seem like that anxiety level is quite there like it probably was in the early days. What was it like releasing a documentary that told the whole story of the band?
Well, that's a whole different
yeah,
that's a whole different animal. And you know, you should talk to Ken about that, because he really is the creator of that documentary. And he directed it and put it together and put a great deal of time into it. And then he and Priscilla Scott edited it. But for me personally, you know, it wasn't, I was never super excited about the whole project. And I have a lot of ambivalence about, you know, its existence in general. But you know, I guess the way that I frame it for myself is I understand it may be of great interest to longtime fans. And that's cool, because I remember being a fan of bands, and when you could see something, some behind the scenes, some perspective, that was always like a rich thing to absorb into your love of the music. So from that perspective, I can get behind it. And if because of the subject matter, if there's any chance that it could help anybody or bring comfort to anybody, and which it seems like it has, then I'm absolutely behind that.
Right on, man. Are you, you know, documentary aside, are you the type of guy who enjoys looking back, like digging into the past, reflecting on things, or is that not kind of your mindset?
Yeah. I'm definitely kind of a obsessively nostalgic, person. Yeah. And I have, yeah, I do. I have like a photographic emotional memory. So, I can go back and remember exactly how, you know, I felt, almost all the way back to probably 2 or 3 years old. We all live in memory, I guess, unless we're Buddhist monks.
Yeah, well, that emotional photographic memory, man, that's good and bad, probably has a swinging pendulum for that.
Yeah. It just depends on which
what the
moment
emotion is.
Which moment you're choosing to drown in. Yeah.
That's right. Are you, I mean, you say going back to 2 or 3 years old, are you a nostalgic person for the band, like for what you've done?
I would say that also when, in terms of like, the creative process and remembering, I get very nostalgic about, the moments where something was created at the beginning of an idea but I'm not nostalgic. I'm not nostalgic. Like I miss things.
Right.
I'm not like MAGA nostalgic, you know?
Yeah, fair enough, man.
No, I mean, you know, I'm not wanting to go back. I like to bring it all into the moment we're in now.
Yeah. There's a that balance of appreciating the past or reflecting on the past, but not, like you said, not going back to the past.
Yeah.
Can you go back about 30 years? I mean, this year marks the 30th anniversary of Fantastic Planet. And I know for the 20th anniversary, you know, you guys hit the road to celebrate it. What runs through your head when you think about that album turning 30?
Well, it's just the first thing is it's just insane that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It's just insane that I'm, you know, how the f*** did I get this old?
Time always wins, man.
Well, yeah, I just thought I would feel a little more mature and wise, you know, that many years had actually passed.
Fair enough.
It's encouraging that I feel as dumb and youthful as I do. That's good. I could see living another 30 years and I'll still be dumb and youthful when I die, which, that's one aspiration.
It's a good goal.
But for me, I just, when we were making that record, there was a sense that we were doing something, really good and unique and eclectic across the course of the record, that touched on a lot of different emotions. And I think for me, the most gratifying, the thing that actually makes me feel sane is that I wasn't crazy, that the fact that people are still listening to it and discovering it now, what I believed in those moments when we were making the record, you know, where it it did have some substance to it that was durable, and that makes me incredibly happy.
I love it, man. Yeah, that is an album that it seems like the more milestones you hit, like 10th, 20th, 30th, that it is even more and more appreciated by a bigger audience.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And yeah,
it's actually like it's beyond anything I would have expected. I mean, I think at the time, in the moment, we felt like maybe it deserved more attention than it got. But if you had said to me, people will listen to it for 7 or 8 years and there'll be some appreciation and then it'll peter out and no one will ever listen to it again, I would have thought that seemed reasonable and fine.
Yeah.
But to think that 30 years later, people are still discovering it, that's fairly ridiculous.
Yeah. In an amazing way, man. I had the chance to see you guys open for The Cult last year in LA, which was just such a fun night, and excited to see you on the road. You're playing a ton of shows this year all over the country. And I know you said near the start of this, you know, it's great to play the new music. I mean, how has that been, playing some of these new songs from the album?
Playing new songs, it's always, you're just trying not to fuck them up, you know, more than the older songs that you've played a few times. Yeah. So that's, there's more concentration going on with the new songs. The thing that I always notice is how all the songs within a set fit together. No matter how different I think one record is from the next or one song is from the next, it's always interesting to, especially with an audience in the room, to play songs that seem to be so disparate from each other in mood or texture or even production from across the records, and yet they still sit together in a set really nicely.
Yeah. I love that, man. Well, beyond this tour, man, what else is on the horizon? What's got your attention these days?
When this tour is done, I have about 4 days, 5 days back in LA, and then I leave with a Perfect Circle to do the European tour that Perfect Circle is doing through June and into July.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, Failure is going out again. So we'll be, playing, because we're only doing part of the U.S. on this tour. So we'll be hitting all the other places we missed. Beyond that, I don't know. Get home, spend time with the family, my kids. That's on my mind.
Do you, we talk about nostalgia and reflecting all that. I mean, do you allow yourself to think way, way down the line, or do you not do that too often?
The future?
Yeah, yeah.
Not really. Maybe a little bit more recently, but not too much. Not specifically. It's more like a broad idea of what the future might be. But no, not like a great planner. Like.
Fair enough, man. Greg Edwards, dude, thank you so much for hanging with us tonight, celebrating everything going on in the world of Failure, especially this new album, Location Lost. The live shows you're on now, the live shows you'll be on later this year here in the States. Listeners, get everything you need at failureband.com. Grab the album, grab tickets. We'll keep you posted right here too. But man, thank you so much for being here, and hopefully we can do it again soon. I can't wait to catch you on the road. I'm going to see you on that second leg later this year, man.
Oh, great. Thank you. Good talking to you.
That wraps up this episode of Loudwire Nights on Demand. Stay caught up with everything happening in the world of rock and metal on the Loudwire app and at loudwire.com.